Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Season 7 of Mads World. I'm your host Mads, and I'm so excited to be back. I have so many exciting guests lined up for you over this next season, and I can't wait for you to hear everything in store. But up first, some exciting news. This episode is sponsored by Beducated, the number one online platform for sexual health and happiness. I'm so excited about partnering with them, because if you enjoy Mads World, you'll love their content. They have a library of over 80 online courses created by the world's top experts, covering everything from healthy porn watching to sex positions to the science of kissing. I recently watched their female orgasm course, which was super fascinating, with so many tips that focus on the whole experience of female pleasure. They have something for everyone, no matter your age, gender, sexual orientation, relationship status, or experience. It's a safe space to learn about sex and level up your love life, even as a single person, aka me. Because Beducated are supporting Mads World, you can do so too by clicking the link in my bio to just go check them out. And as a little treat, you can try all courses free for 24 hours and use the code Mads, M-A-D-S, in caps lock for 40% off their yearly pass. In this episode, I am joined by award-winning comedian, writer, and performer Fran Bush. She's had sold-out runs at Soho Theatre and The Roundhouse, written features for The Guardian, Cosmopolitan, Metro, and been a guest on BBC Radio 4's Woman's Hour. I invited Fran to chat on the pod about her book, My Broken Vagina. The book follows her funny, moving, and sometimes awkward quest to fix her sex life. It mirrors the story of millions of women everywhere, with half of all women having felt pain during sex. During Fran's journey towards a better relationship with her genitals, doctors advised her to have a glass of wine to loosen up, and male friends suggested she simply hadn't tried the right penis yet. Unsurprisingly, neither worked. After a visit to sex camp and many attempts to fix her broken vagina, Fran decided to share her own hilarious, excruciating, and sometimes upsetting experiences. With the help of her 16-year-old self's diary, expert advice, candid and enlightening interviews with others about sex, and some self-care exercises, Fran sets about trying to make herself and other people feel like they're not being gaslit by their own vaginas. In this episode, we chat about female sexual dysfunction and the variations, vaginismus, self-esteem and mental health, staying present, and much more. I hope you enjoy. Hello, Fran.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm so good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm really good. We're recording this in the middle of a heat wave, so it's an absolute struggle. As you were saying, recording podcasts in a heat wave is not the one. Fans off, windows closed, in the dark. Like, well, not in the dark, but you know what I mean.
I've abandoned underwear. I think underwear was not made for heat waves.
No.
And I've sort of adopted like a, it feels like quite like a gorilla stance. So like I've just got as much airflow around like my armpits and the back of my knees as possible.
Yeah, I call that the cowboy stance as well. Like when you've got chafing at a festival, chafing at the beach, and you just walk around like a cowboy.
It's good. We're taking up space.
Honestly, it's like, what is it, man spreading, but the female version.
Yeah, but this one's really empowering, I think.
Yeah, I love it. Empowering and cooling.
Power pose.
Exactly. So thank you so much for joining the podcast. I'm super excited to chat to you because this is something that has interested me for so long, because I think it's something that I've gone through in my life and so many women and so many people go through. So I have a few upfront questions just about your career and how you started out. And first of all, about your book, My Broken Vagina. So I just want you to tell me everything about your book and why people should go out and grab a copy.
Yeah, so My Broken Vagina, which is a really fun title to ask for at the bookshop. Even I get shy at saying, like, do you have My Broken Vagina in? Which I thought I would be over by now, but I'm not. I'm still just like, Oh, I've got a question for you. But it's about me turning 30 and realizing I wasn't having the sex life I hoped to be having. Mm-hmm. I realized that I was sort of pretending to enjoy sex a lot. I'd got really good at it. I was making all the right noises. Mm. I was putting on this real show, performing for partners. But actually, my experience of sex over time had been that it had been painful sometimes. Mm-hmm. I hadn't always felt very aroused, and I really struggled to orgasm. Mm-hmm. And that was so drastically different to the sex I'd seen in movies or on TV, or even the sex you mostly hear people talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I was broken, hence the name My Broken Vagina. Mm. And so the book is about me going on a bit of a mission, a quest to try and fix myself. And I think the something that people can, or anyone can relate to really, is sometimes that feeling of that you're broken, that there's something wrong with you. Why aren't you like everyone else? Why isn't your body like everyone else? Yeah. And when it's with sex, it's quite a hard thing to talk about. People don't want to say that they're not having the kind of porn star type sex that we see everywhere else, that we're not like having 17 orgasms in one afternoon session. And it was about me, I guess, being vulnerable, but it's also a very funny book.
Yeah.
Because sex is funny.
And it's so interesting that it's so hard to talk about when it's something that literally most people on earth will do in their life. People are, you know, born from sex, but it's something that's still so taboo and so hard to speak about. But you're right, there is such a like funny, vulnerable human element to it that's just a bit like, you know, a bit gross, a bit fun, like a bit weird. Everyone has like their own experiences with it. But yeah, it's fascinating that everyone finds it difficult to speak about because it's such a human experience.
Yeah, we get really shy about it, don't we? And I think there's like an ego thing in there as well. So we all want to think like, and me too, like I want to think that I'm an incredible lover, you know? Mm-hmm. And to admit that sometimes maybe we don't know what we're doing, or that sex education really let us down, which I think it did for most people.
Yeah.
Most people's sex education was terrible and missed out huge swathes of experience. So to admit that and say, actually, do you know what? I don't know how to make this better. I don't know who to ask. Because whose responsibility is it for me to have a banging sex life?
Oh my God, that's so true. And do you know what? I've definitely been there with just sitting around with the girls talking about sex, or, you know, your friend shows up late to pre-drinks or something and they're like, oh, sorry, I've been in bed shagging all day, like haven't had that much sex in ages and stuff. And I'm just sitting there like, oh my God, like, I just don't want to have sex like five times. There's no part of me that wants that. And then you do find yourself thinking like, is there something wrong with me? Like, should I be wanting to do that? Should I be at home having sex five times before I come to pre-drinks? Like, you like question everything and you're just like, am I normal? Like, am I like everyone else? And then you kind of have that spiral of like, are people just, you know, over-explaining things? Are people talking things up? Is it like how you imagine it is in porn versus the sex your friends are having versus the sex you're having? So yeah, it's so interesting that, and I find it so inspiring that you've written this book, and I can't wait to read it. I'm super buzzing to read it.
Oh, thank you.
And how did it feel seeing it come to life in the diary of My Broken Vagina on Channel 4, which I absolutely loved, by the way?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was amazing because I kept teenage diaries, mm-hmm. like the whole way through, and they are excruciating. I read back
yeah.
from being like 13, and I would just like, I'd be pretending that a boy I fancied had rang my house, but of course he hadn't, but I was just like living my best teenage life fictionally. But I have these diaries of the whole time when I was first trying to lose my virginity. And I was quite detailed. I really said, it didn't work basically for a very long time. I just couldn't manage to make things click or fit mm-hmm. together in the way that I thought that they should.
Mm.
So seeing those diaries come to life on TV was amazing because they're so goofy and quirky yeah. and awkward. And I guess a lot of the teenage experience we see nowadays is quite like shiny and these cool teens. And I was not a cool teen. I was every inch as awkward as they come.
So it wasn't like watching Euphoria then and like people having this awesome sex life.
It was absolutely nothing like watching Euphoria. I cannot relate to that show at all.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I'm going to put a link in the episode description for everyone listening. If you haven't seen it, definitely go and check it out. And obviously there's a comedic element to everything you do as well, which I think is super important when we're talking about these issues. And as a comedian, what interests you most about exploring female bodies and your own body as a subject matter, and sort of where did this fascination begin? How did you sort of get into that?
Yeah, I think I never really thought I was actually going to talk about my vagina on stage because it's so personal, right?
Yeah.
And there's an episode of Friends where they go to see a one-woman show, and it's just this woman on stage who's like, chapter one, my first period. And it's like, I was like, oh my God, is that what I'm making? Am I making this like terrifying, angry sort of sexual experience where I talk about my vulva? And that makes, you know, even now, my toes are curling even thinking about that. So I was like, okay, I do want to talk about this, but I need to find a way that is right.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the other end of things, like no one wants a lecture on this. I mean, you can go out and watch a lecture. There are plenty of them. There are TED Talks. There's all kinds of amazing resources out there if you want facts and statistics. But actually, to really, I guess, get to grips with this subject, it had to be funny for me.
Yeah.
Because sex is funny, because of the, you know, it's the weirdest thing we do as humans.
Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah.
But also I think it makes it easier to talk about for other people. It's very disarming. If you can laugh at something, suddenly it feels 100 times more easy to talk about. And I would get people coming up to me after my shows because it started life as a one-woman show,
mm-hmm.
and audience members would come up to me afterwards and say, I really resonated with this, that thing happened to me. And suddenly they were sharing experience with me in a way I hadn't really anticipated. I thought people would just be sitting there going, oh, this is embarrassing, please make her stop talking about her fanny.
Oh, well, it's so amazing that you've accomplished all of this. And what keeps you busy apart from comedy and writing? What do you love doing outside work? Because obviously this is a massive part of your life. And you were telling me before you're going up to Edinburgh Fringe, which will be awesome. But yeah, what else keeps you busy and what are you passionate about?
Dance. I love dancing.
Really?
Yeah, I love it.
I love that. What kind of dancing?
Oh, anything. I do a kind of dancing called diva dance, which is exactly what it says on the label. Just endless Beyonce and Lizzo, just incredible.
Oh my God.
I'm going to learn salsa in September, which I think will be great, hopefully.
I'm obsessed with that. That's just so random.
Do you know what? I just, people meditate a lot and I have a very busy mind. My mind is just like always ticking over. And I sit down and try and meditate and I can't. My brain is always like, oh, you should have checked this thing. You haven't paid the gas bill.
Yeah, yeah. It's never switching off.
But the only time I manage to feel like my mind is completely clear is if I dance. And I think part of that is because you can't think about anything else. You'll fall on your face if you do. And part of that is just like a real great connection with your head and your body. So yeah, dance, swimming, and cake.
What kind of cake? Those are my three.
Just any cake. I think cake is great. We should all have more cake.
Like making cake or just buying cakes and eating them?
Do you know what? I used to make them and then I was like, other people make these so much better.
So you just go and buy cakes. Do you know what? I read this meme once and it was like, once you realize you don't need it to be a birthday to buy a birthday cake, the next part of your life really begins.
Oh, I totally get behind that sentiment. Yes. Yeah. So that's my passion.
I'm obsessed with that. So dancing, swimming, cake, love it. And in your opinion, what has been the most interesting change to the way sex has been approached over the last 50 years? So obviously there's so many different pivotal things like the pill and then, you know, the BDSM community, and there's just so many different touch points. But what would be, in your opinion, the most interesting thing?
I guess there's something that's been happening around female pleasure becoming recognized as sort of part of self-care and the importance of female pleasure in general. Like there are apps for it now. Sex toys don't all look like big throbbing penises with veins on them. Like they look kind of, you know, beautifully aerodynamic, like things you could put on in a gallery on display.
Yeah, or like an alien or something.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, there's TV shows, documentaries on Netflix. So I think just this, I guess, taking pleasure and putting that more center stage and being something that you're like, actually, I'm not out of line in asking for this and not expecting necessarily, but for this to be part of my sexual experience. And that's something I'm sort of, I'd say maybe even in the last sort of 10 years feels like it's really started to be more talked about.
I love it that it's also there's a focus on the female gaze as well, and the male gaze is sort of removed from that female self-pleasure because, as you said, there's no male influence when it's a sex toy that doesn't look like a penis. And also it's not about, you know, men saying, oh, I love it when I can make a woman orgasm, or, you know, it's not about men saying, oh, I find it attractive when a woman comes or whatever. It's more about the female experience separate from the male gaze. And I think that is just so cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think just having, it's almost like more spaces have emerged where women can feel safe to explore that. And whether that is, I don't know, there are all kinds of, there are classes, there are online tutorials. There's so much out there that now it doesn't feel like a dirty little secret that you're creeping into the back of a sex shop to try and find something. Or you're like, you've got a secret browser open and hoping no one else sees it. It feels now like, oh, okay, we're maybe ready to have more of this conversation.
Yeah, and I even remember 10 years ago, like when I just finished school, I don't know if this is a maturity thing, but I remember like talking about masturbation with someone else, one of my friends, and they were just like, ew, I can't believe you do that, or I've never done that. And they were just totally like disgusted. And I was like, I even felt that it was weird, like her reaction. I was like, oh my God, like this is obviously a normal thing that we're obviously, we're all doing it. Like, why are we not speaking about it? But now I feel like, you know, you can sit around with the girls and it's the same way that men can sit around and joke about it and speak about it and all those sorts of things. Like, I don't know whether that's just in my own circles, like maturing, or if it's just the way that things like sex and masturbation are being spoken about amongst women.
I think it is a growing conversation, definitely. And I think it's probably both of those things together happening at exactly the right time. And I mean, I don't, no, but I feel like a lot of the conversations that happen between men about sex are quite surface level sometimes, because there is that thing of not wanting to open up, to not want to admit that you're vulnerable, to not want to say that something maybe isn't right. And so I think there's hopefully over time that will become more of a thing as well.
Yeah. And it kind of links to what you said about humor making things easier to speak about. Because I think in straight cis male circles, humor is how they go into those conversations. It's how they open up. It's kind of like if they are feeling so anxious about something, they want to raise it with the boys, they'll make a joke about it, or they'll say something about how they had a wank and it was weird or something. And then they'll be like, but you actually think that was weird though? Like,
yeah.
You think that's like a segue to go in, which is like exactly what you were talking about before.
Mm.
So I wanted to get into a bit of a discussion about the themes in your book surrounding female sexual dysfunction, because I found it so fascinating reading up on this online and listening to a few other podcasts that you've done about this. And I just wanted to know, in your own words, can you tell me what female sexual dysfunction means to you?
When I first started trying to have sex, I found it incredibly painful. I was having sex with someone with a penis, and I wasn't able to get the penis to go inside me. And I went to the doctor several times, and I was just fobbed off every single time. Like,
yeah.
One doctor would say, oh, like, you just need to get out there more, you know, go have more sex. One said, have a glass of wine to loosen yourself up a bit.
Oh my God.
One said, oh, it will probably stretch more once you've had a baby, not even asking if that was part of my life plan.
Oh my God.
I got so much terrible advice.
Yeah.
And I felt very on my own with it. And so I, of course, as we all do, ended up turning to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest thing I managed to find was the term female sexual dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And broadly, it's an umbrella term which covers experiencing pain during sex, or difficulties with arousal,
mm-hmm.
Or any difficulties orgasming. And I was like, oh, actually, that feels like the closest fit, because I did find sex very painful, which meant that I didn't always want it the next time.
Your body has an inherent response as well when it comes to things like pain as well. Like, you're not going to get aroused if your body knows that something hurt you in the past.
Completely. Your body has a memory, right?
Yeah.
Like, it holds on to stuff. And so with those two things in play, there's no way I'm going to orgasm. So I was like, it sort of feels like the closest thing I've found so far. But it's also a term I find quite tricky, because how do you define if you are not like aroused enough or not orgasming enough? Like, I didn't know where my comparison was meant to be. Like, was I being demanding, asking that I had more orgasms, or be like, I feel like I should be more aroused? And, you know, we all know that shoulds are really dangerous, like feeling like you should be doing something or it should be a certain way.
And it's interesting that it encompasses pain and, on the other end of the spectrum, just not enough pleasure. Mm. So it's sort of like you were saying, is there a different level of that? Yeah, what is the peak, or what is the, you know, the normal level of pleasure that you should be experiencing? And the fact that that's used under an umbrella term alongside pain, it just seems like there should be more of an exploration there. But like you said, on the internet, there's only so much that, you know, you can find sometimes, especially with when things are sort of new concepts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's this sort of feeling that you're like, well, am I just chasing like more and more and more? And at what point should I just be sort of satisfied? And we're told as well, you know, we're told when we first start having sex that sex will probably be painful, because we're taught, you know, we're taught about the hymen generally. That's one of the only things I was taught about.
Yeah, so weird. And it's like a one-time thing, and then you forget about it forever. Like, teach me about what I'm actually going to have to use
throughout my life. And actually, like, it doesn't have to be painful. We're taught that it's going to be painful, and so we sort of learn to expect pain. But for most people, the first time you have penetrative sex, it doesn't have to be, and actually shouldn't be, really. But a lot of the time because people are tense, because people are nervous, because people probably aren't using lube other than a lubricated condom, probably, then it is painful. But it does feel a bit, with this term, female sexual dysfunction, it does sort of feel like they all got just chucked in a bag together.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're like general vagina problems.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Which is hard when you're looking for a label for what you're experiencing.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, we've spoken briefly about sort of how everything is chucked into a bag, and you know, there's sort of a different spectrum of different types of female sexual dysfunctions. But what would be the different types of female sexual dysfunction that you would say? Like, obviously, there's vaginismus. Have I said that right? I've been reading the word so much and I'm like, in my head, that's how I say it. Like vaginismus. And then there's just, you know, what would be the different types? I'm not going to say it for you because obviously you're the expert here. But yeah, what would the different types of female sexual dysfunction be?
Well, sure. I think vaginismus is one that I definitely feel like fitted some of my experience. Mm-hmm. So that is when there is an involuntary clamping of the vaginal muscles, mm-hmm. Which make penetration pretty impossible. And that is, it's not only penetration with a penis, but it can be during a cervical screening, or if someone is trying to use tampons, it can just be like, no, absolutely no way.
Yeah.
There's nothing going in here. Mm-hmm. There are treatment options available for that if anyone thinks that they're experiencing something like that. And often people will say it feels like there's a brick wall at the entrance to my vagina. It feels like this penis or this sex toy or this tampon is hitting a brick wall. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's pain associated with that as well. But often talking therapies, psychosexual therapy, or there's dilating treatment where basically these sort of silicone dilators can be used, mm-hmm. to acclimatize the vagina to having something in it. And they start in a very small size and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. So that's I think probably when I was a teenager and when I was trying to desperately lose my virginity to my first ever boyfriend, I think that's probably what I experienced. But there are other ones which are more to do with like irritation in the vulva, and also I guess like changes. You have changes around different times in your menstrual cycle. Some people who take antidepressants will notice that at different times they will maybe not be as aroused, or they might notice that they're drier. Like, and there are loads of things like that. Someone told me, hay fever medicine, apparently antihistamines can really affect.
Really?
Yeah, and I have bad hay fever, so I didn't know that at all. But there are so many things that can affect the way we feel sexually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder, so would you put in the same group of this just indifference to sex? Because there's asexual people, but then what about people that are just indifferent to sex, and whether that be like from different issues like depression or anxiety or things like that, would you put that under the same umbrella as female sexual dysfunction?
So it, again, this is the thing where it's like, oh, it's so hard to categorize, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And medically, when lots of these definitions were being created, the thing that made it a medical problem mm-hmm. was whether or not the person experienced distress.
Okay.
Because for one person, actually having sex once a week for 10 minutes is perfect. Yeah. For one person, that's like going to be a desert. So everyone's idea of what they want to be their normal mm-hmm. is going to be so vastly different. So the thing that really tips it over the edge into actually, I want to seek help, is there help available? Mm-hmm. is if the person is experiencing distress, which I think a lot of people do.
And do you think that distress could be caused by outside influences? So, for example, your friends all saying that they're having sex every day, or, you know, you're watching things in porn that you think are normal, and you think that doesn't turn me on, or that's not the sex that I'm having. Do you think that distress is coming from not what people want, but what they expect that they should be having?
Yeah, I think that can definitely be true. I read a study that was saying about how much sex people actually are having, and it's so much less than we all think.
Is it?
Yeah, it's really not as much as you would imagine. Mm. And a lot of people say that's, you know, it's because of technology. Everyone's on their phones, you know, different priorities. But like, we're working differently, certainly over the last few years. I mean, I applaud anyone that's had a sex drive consistently. So I think, you know, there really can be this feeling of comparison, and comparison is the saying, comparison is the thief of joy.
And that, I love that.
Definitely can be true. And I think the trouble is, it's a bit of a head fuck, isn't it? Because you're like, okay, am I experiencing a feeling of comparison, mm-hmm. or am I experiencing something that could be helped? And actually, the Venn diagram of those two things overlaps, but it's just about working out who to ask. Because I went to the doctors, I went to the doctors many, many times. Mm-hmm. And one of the times, which was, I think, in my early 30s, I was just like, you know, I'm really not orgasming at the mm-hmm. moment, like mm-hmm. at all. And they were like, right, well, what do you want us to do about that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Half of me was like, oh, God, this is so embarrassing. Please, Earth, swallow me now. And half of me was like, I guess fair enough, because you know, you look at your body and you're like, well, my legs aren't falling off, I'm not in immediate danger. This is a luxury problem, or
if it's affecting your quality of life, though, you know, if it's something that is a human experience that everyone else seems to be getting joy and pleasure out of, then it's completely valid.
Yeah.
I'm just having a drink, sorry. So in saying all of that, it sounds quite similar to when people have things like depression, and especially in men. I've found this in a lot of the boyfriends I've had in the past. They say things like, yeah, I'm just feeling like down and sad and quite worthless and, you know, not good enough and stuff. And I'll be like, sounds like you have depression. And they're like, oh, nah, I don't think I'm depressed, because like depressed people, you know, like want to kill themselves and stuff. And I'm like, you don't have to be, you know, so far down the rabbit hole with something in your health. Like your leg doesn't have to be chopped clean off before you go to the doctor. Like if you've got a sore leg, you can go, you know, whereas like with this, it's like maybe if it's something that is worrying you and it's something it's, you think like, oh, you know, I don't have it so bad, but it could be worse. That's still like reason enough to go and, you know, seek different types of therapy, the ones you were speaking about before, which I was going to ask, are all of those therapies that you spoke about, like sex therapy and psychotherapy and stuff, are they all quite new treatments? Because as you were saying, like in the last 10 years, this has become more of a spoken about thing.
I think certainly like access to them has grown a lot bigger. But I think they have been around for a while. But I think the trouble is, like, I spoke to a lot of, when I was writing the book, I spoke to GPs and I spoke to people who work with women's health. Mm. And actually, like, the amount of training and the amount of time spent when they're studying on any kind of sexual problems is sometimes non-existent.
Really?
Yeah, you know, and I guess even people who've just had babies sometimes, there's a lot of looking after the baby. There's a lot of talking to the mother about general health. But things like sex, things like, you know, when it is a good time to have sex again, if they would like to, that isn't there so much. There are really big gaping holes, which means that a lot of people are sort of going to slip through the cracks.
This sort of brings me to my next question and point is, what would you say in regards to how male sexual dysfunction is approached versus female?
Yeah, I guess neither is great. Neither is great. I would say that there's definitely more out there. You know, I see big adverts for Viagra on the London Underground. I see adverts for it in the ad breaks of Love Island. Like, it's visible, and more it's not being treated as he can't get it up. This person isn't hard enough. This person's come too soon. It's becoming less and less the butt of a joke. But it is still a bit, and I think there are extraordinary pressures on people with penises to have erections that last for hours, be rock hard. There's this idea that they're up for it all the time, and actually that isn't the case. And it's also those ideas are harmful to everyone, right?
Yeah, and I wonder if it's sort of a capitalist approach to it, because if you can make money from the idea that men should be these like sexual machines that are always horny and, you know, create that sense of feeling left out if you can't perform and wanting to match the level of sex that all of your mates are having around you and be able to joke about, you know, shagging for hours and all those things. Is it just all a big capitalist ploy to sort of make money from men, whereas with women and female orgasms and female pleasure, it was probably something that wasn't really spoken about. So it wasn't something that females felt pressured to, you know, adhere to and rise up to if they weren't meeting a certain standard.
Yeah, well, so when Viagra first came out as a drug, it made so much money. It was an enormous, enormous boom. And that's actually why drugs for women in the same area, in the same vein, started being looked into, because they were like, oh my God, if we can make this much money for penises, just imagine. And I read something that said that there were suddenly these people with penises who hadn't been having very much sex, then were taking Viagra and suddenly were expecting a lot more sex. And there were all of these women who are like, oh, I sort of thought we weren't doing that anymore. What is there for me?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where the female sexual dysfunction label came from, because they're like, well, we can't medicate this. We can't produce a drug for this if there isn't a name for it.
Yeah.
They did lots of drug trials, and there are a few things that people do take, but actually a lot of them have been deemed not safe enough or to not have enough of a benefit to be worth it. But there was this mad race to create something for women that would be as powerful as Viagra. And so, yeah, I think you're completely right. I'm such a nerd on it. I find it so interesting the way that drug companies feel this idea that we are broken, that we are not having sex in the right way enough.
Yeah.
So that definitely propelled by capitalism, yes.
And in saying that, I found that so interesting when you just said having sex in the right way. So do you think there's an assumption that we as humans should just know how to, like, not only have sex, but to have good sex and enjoy sex? Because even today, I was saying to my housemate, I was like, oh my God, I haven't done it in ages. I feel like I forgot. Like, I don't know how to do it. And he was like, Mads, you need to calm down. It's just natural. You're just going to figure it out. And I was like, okay. But do you think there is this assumption that we should just know how to do it and not have to be taught how to have good sex?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. I mean, I didn't know that I had a clitoris for so long. Like, no one said that word to me. I definitely wouldn't have been able to locate it. I was calling my vagina a vulva right until a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know the statistic is something like, it's like 65% of women orgasm most of the time during sex, and 95% of men orgasm most of the time during sex. And I didn't know that that was a thing until a few years ago. I think I thought it was only me. And then I also didn't know that actually, like, penetrative sex is probably one of the least reliable ways of having an orgasm during sex. But I didn't know that, because all I'd seen was penis in vagina sex. And I didn't know that actually, I think the statistic is something like 75% of women orgasm through help from tongue, hands, or sex toys, or additional, but not, it's not penetration. So all these things I don't want to use the phrase like boned up on it, but I really have.
I've got two final questions, and these are going to be based on everything that you've learned through all of your work and all of your research over the last few years. So one of the issues, especially for me and for a lot of women, is staying present during sex and not letting your mind wander and trying to live in the moment, because a lot of female pleasure comes from the mental side of things. So what are your best tips on staying present during sex?
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it?
It's so hard.
Because I'm always like, I'll be having sex and then I'll be like, my boobs look weird. Why do my boobs look so weird? Or I'm sweaty, or maybe I should have done something different with my pubes. Or like, you know, suddenly my brain is outside of the room entirely. I'm thinking about what's in the fridge, or like who's going to win the next election. And I'm suddenly not there.
Yep.
And I think it's something that I'm working on, and I'm definitely not entirely there yet, but is mindfulness in the bedroom. And mindfulness as a word always really turns me off, because I guess I find it so hard. But I think just really pulling your attention to what is going on in the present moment and breathing. And if you have a thought that you're like, oh, my nipples look weird from this position, then you're like, okay, I've had that thought. I just put that to the side. Not dwell on it, just I think the mindfulness phrase is imagining the thoughts like clouds crossing over a sky.
Oh yeah, that's nice.
Just let it go past. But also there are things that can help. Like, I think it's about learning what you like and being able to communicate that. and not worrying that someone is going to judge you for communicating that to them. So for example, like I find music really helps me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're someone that knows that they are probably a bit more relaxed and calm late at night or first thing in the morning. And we can't always dictate those things, right? We lead really, really busy lives. But
mm-hmm.
setting more of your non-negotiables up.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, I really like it if I've just had a shower, because then I know I'm not going to feel like a bit icky. Or I really mm-hmm. like it in the shower, which, I mean, I applaud anyone that can have effective sex in the shower.
It's
I think
so
it
difficult.
Is. And so dangerous.
So dangerous. I slipped over in the bathroom the other day and I was fighting for my life there, friend. I banged my head on the door, nearly snapped my arm off. I laid there just heavy breathing and I was like,
oh, no.
If there was two of us here, we'd both be dead.
You'd be dead. And then they'd find you like that and they'd know. Oh,
at least I'm alone. At least I'm single and alone. R.I.P. me. I think setting those boundaries is definitely, and not even just boundaries, but just like parameters on what you like and what you don't like. I mean, it's easy to do in a relationship. When you're single, it is harder, but you know,
yeah.
if you've got a regular sexual partner as well, I think it makes it a lot easier if you've got like a foundation of friendship and trust and stuff, and you can talk about those things.
Yeah.
In giving advice, this is my final question for you. What advice would you give your younger self in regards to sex?
Lube.
Nice.
Lube, yeah. I'd had these ideas that lube was for people that really were broken. That lube was for when you were over 50 and was embarrassing and basically was like confessing that you were a dried up desert of a vagina. And I didn't get over that until probably until my 30s. Like, it still felt like an embarrassment bringing it out, bringing it with me. But again, you know, when I was single, having that as a non-negotiable now, like, I will take lube on a date because I can't guarantee that they will have one. And I can't guarantee that they'll have one I like. They might have some kind of weird, oh my God. Also, like, check the ingredients of your lube. Some lubes should not be near genitals at all.
In what way? Because they've got like menthol or because they've got allergens in them?
Oh, I mean, some of them have all kinds of rubbish in it. It's just really worth doing a bit of research and seeing. Because people can be really allergic to things, but also some lubes can really affect the pH of your vagina, and that's really bad as well. Some can give really bad thrush. So the thing that is meant to make sex better can end up really making it worse. I would recommend, yes, organics, which sounds fancy because it's organic, but actually it is brilliant, and especially for anyone that experiences any kind of vaginal pain. You just know there's no irritants in there. There's nothing that's going to upset the pH. So you can just slather it on and not worry.
Fran, I never thought a chat about lube could be so inspiring, but I really can't wait to read your book. I'm literally going to buy it as soon as we jump off the phone, but this has been so fun. Thank you so much for coming on and just, yeah, offering so much insight and just being a really relaxing voice on the pod. I loved it. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with the gorgeous Fran. Please let me know on my website, madsworld.co, or my Instagram at madsworld.mp3 if you have any stories or thoughts of your own to share. Love and elbow taps. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.